Good morning. Have you ever had a really good customer service experience? You ever had that where the person helping you was just, man, they were on your team. And I mean, they were tuned into you, they connected with you on a human level, and they made you feel like your concerns mattered to them. That's tough to do. Customer service is a tough job. But man, how valued do you feel when someone does that, when someone really does care about your concerns? Now, have you ever had the opposite? You had a bad customer service experience where it was like, hello, am I even here? Like they don't care about you. They don't care about what you're struggling with or your concerns, and you're just totally overlooked. You ever feel that way? That hurts, doesn't it? It makes me question, like, do you even think I'm worth your time or worth your energy? Like, what's going on here? Have you ever felt that way about God? Like, maybe God, he's too busy running the universe and he doesn't quite see me. Like, God, do you care about my concerns? God, do you care about what I'm struggling with? I've been there. I've questioned that before of like, God, are you just overlooking what I'm going through, or do I actually matter to you? And I'm here to tell you this morning that you do matter. Your concerns do matter to God. He does not overlook you. But don't take my word for it. To prove that he does, we're going to look at a story of Jesus in which someone was overlooked. And we're going to see, how does Jesus react? How does God feel about people being overlooked? And what does he do about it? And what I'm hoping that our takeaway will be from this morning is that we'll observe what causes people to be overlooked. What makes that happen? And then how does God avoid overlooking people? And finally, we'll consider, how can we be like God? How can we be like Jesus and make sure to not overlook others? So if you haven't already, if you turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 3, Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, that's where this situation occurs in which someone is overlooked. And in this story, it starts with Jesus, an injured man, and the Pharisees walk into a synagogue. And it kind of sounds like the beginning of a joke, doesn't it? I'm waiting for a punchline. Unfortunately, this situation is anything but funny, because as soon as all three of those people groups get in the same room, there is tension. I mean, you can feel the tension. Now, to understand why is there so much tension, we need to know who all is involved. First of all, there's Jesus. And from these people's perspective, Jesus was known as a great teacher. People were coming from all around to hear his words. Man, they were powerful. His sermons and his teaching, they were impactful. And not only that, but he's a healer. They watched him open the eyes of blind people so they could see again. Lame people were able to walk again. He was curing diseases. So this is a powerful teacher and a healer. And he comes into the synagogue. And also there's a man with a shriveled hand or a withered hand. Now, I'm not sure if this was a disease or if this was a disability he was born with or an injury. I'm not so sure, but what we do know is this man's hand was unusable. Whatever it was, it was something that needed healing, but he could not do anything about. And I think it's necessary, before we go on, to stop for a moment and sympathize with this man. If you have two good working hands, would you consider for a moment, what would it be like to have one hand that was just not usable for the rest of your life? How would that change your day-to-day activities? How would it change the way you eat, the way you cook, the way you fold laundry, the way you hug your loved ones. I mean, it presents some challenges, some real challenges in his life, but not just physical challenges. No, in this day and age, many believe that if you had some sort of disability like this, it was because God was punishing you for sin. Now, that's not true. We know that, but many thought that way. And so this man was likely not just had physical challenges, but there was also this social tension around him. Let's maybe not make eye contact with him. Now, are you getting a picture of how challenging this man's life is? How hard? How many times he has been overlooked? And he's here in the synagogue, in the place of worship where Jesus walks into. And now here's our third group of people that's in this synagogue, the Pharisees. Now the Pharisees, they get kind of a bad rap most of the time, but they had a cool job, okay? Their job was to be an example to the people of God's character and remind people of God's commands and make sure that we are all on track, we are all right with God. That's cool. And they took God's commands very seriously. The problem is, some of them, it's almost like they took God's commands too seriously. They would go overboard with things in the name of keeping God's commands. For example, God commanded keep the Sabbath holy. He wanted one day a week to be dedicated to resting. That's good. God wanted that. The Pharisees, however, would take that a step too far and say, okay, it's Sabbath. You can only walk this far. And one more step. You walk any farther than that, you're breaking the rules. You're not resting anymore. Resting? Not resting. And so, like, and it's, really? Okay. Now, it was some of them, they were doing this in the name of keeping God's commands. They might have overshot it a little bit. But there were some among the Pharisees that liked those rules because they were power hungry, because they got a big head about their title. They like the authority and say, ooh, I can jump all over people as soon as they break the rules. They like being popular and having that power. That's so unfortunate that some of them felt that way. And those that didn't like, guess who? Jesus. This popular teacher that everyone else was listening to that was gaining popularity instead of them. So now we have all three of these, Jesus, the man with the shriveled hand, and these Pharisees all in one room. And this is where the tension comes from. Read with me what happens in Mark chapter 3, starting in verse 2. It says that some of them, the Pharisees, some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everyone. So here we have the Pharisees watching Jesus. They are dialed in, focused on him. And they're wondering, is Jesus going to heal this man with the shriveled hand? Because if he does, we can jump on him. We can say, you're not resting anymore. You're healing. That's not resting. And then those power hungry, those authoritative Pharisees among them, man, they were like, then we could discredit Jesus. We could say he doesn't care about God's commands. We could get rid of him. You see the scheming wheels turning in their brains? They're, oh, here we go. You see the problem here? They are like horses with blinders on. You ever seen those? Those flaps that you put over horses' eyes to get them to focus just on what's ahead. Limit distractions. I like to think maybe I need some of those when I'm doing homework and just, I gotta focus. No distractions, no nothing. But the Pharisees, what they were focused on is their own selfish agenda, getting rid of Jesus. That's all they cared about. That's all they were looking for, was how do we accuse him? and they were missing something really important. See, had this gone differently, had they taken those blinders off, they may have said, here's a man who's struggling, who's got a hard life, and here's a well-known healer that just walked into the synagogue. Jesus, you're a healer. Could you do something for this man? Wouldn't that be great? Think of how that would ease the tension in the room. Think of how beautiful that moment would be. But no, instead, they've got their blinders on. Just how do we get rid of Jesus? So these Pharisees, they overlooked the man's needs in order just to focus on getting what they wanted. And it was almost like they knew the man with the shriveled hand was there, but they saw him only as a pawn in their scheme. Nothing else. They didn't consider what he was going through. So this shows us what's the first thing that causes people to be overlooked. It's selfish eyes. The Pharisees had selfish eyes, these eyes that only look towards getting what I want, my agenda, my desires. You see how differently Jesus reacted, though? Jesus was not focused just on what he wanted, but he saw the man. It's almost as if he was looking for him. He was looking for who is being overlooked. Who can I bless? Who can I help in this room? Jesus, instead of having selfish eyes, Jesus had seeking eyes. Eyes that were looking to see, how can I do something for someone else? How can I love those that aren't being loved right now? And then Jesus asked the man with the shriveled hand, come up in front of everyone. I don't know about you, but man, that would be so nerve-wracking. I mean, is he trying to embarrass him? I mean, that's scary. I can speak from experience, as in my experience right now. It can be nerve-wracking being in front of everyone. I mean, why is Jesus calling this man up? But he's not trying to make the man nervous, the man with the shriveled hand. Instead, perhaps Jesus is giving everyone else in the room one last opportunity to take their blinders off. One last opportunity. Do you see this human being, this individual? He's right here, standing in front of you. Would you consider what he's going through? There's one last opportunity, one last reaching out to see, are these people going to open their eyes to what he might be dealing with? And now is where the tension in the room reaches its climax. Because now Jesus and the Pharisees are there. They know the situation. They know what each other's motives are. And Jesus has just pulled this man in front of everyone. And what's he going to do? Jesus says, look at the question he asks. He looks at them in verse 4, and it says, which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? You realize what Jesus is doing with that very poignant question. He is challenging their thoughts on the Sabbath, challenging how they view God's command. It's almost as if he is pushing back on what they have in their minds and saying, yes, it's good to take God's command seriously, but don't miss the good that could happen. There is good that could still happen within God's command, and you're missing it. So he offers the Pharisees this one last opportunity. See the good that could happen. And what does verse 4 tell us that the Pharisees said in response? Nothing. They stayed silent. Jesus gave them that opportunity and they're, no. And then we read in the very next verse, it says that Jesus looked at them with anger. He was angry. He's emotionally invested in this man's well-being. And because they are overlooking him, he is angry. And it says he's deeply distressed at what? At their stubborn hearts or their hardened hearts. This is the idea of a heart that is unwilling to budge. A heart that says, no, this is how it should be done. This is how it has to be done. This is what I'm focusing on. I will not consider anything or anyone outside of this. That's a stubborn heart. And that is what these Pharisees had. They had a stubborn heart. They're unwilling to consider anything different than their own motives, their own understanding. So this is what causes people to be overlooked, is these stubborn hearts that are unwilling to consider anyone else. And Jesus was angry because he was so opposite. He had a heart that was open to look and to see and to love other people. Jesus had a loving heart. He wanted the Sabbath to be kept. That's one of God's commands, and it was good. But he also saw the importance of, within those commands, it's important to do good on behalf of someone who needs it. And so Jesus had this heart, this loving heart that says, I want what's best for you. I want what's best for you, and I'm willing to do something about it. I'm willing to put myself out there in order to achieve what is best for you. That's the kind of heart that Jesus has. And so what does that lead Jesus to do? Once he's called this man up there and he's challenged the Pharisees, but they are unbudging, he turns to the man and he says, stretch out your hand. And this man stretches out, and it says that his hand was restored. His hand was back to full strength, full functionality. All those things that we considered earlier of the challenges that this would bring to his life, gone. The burdens, the social tension around his injury, gone. This man's life was changed in a moment. This is awesome. This is cause for celebration. What do the Pharisees do? Do they get up and say, thank you. This is awesome. This is cause for celebration. Do they join in with the happy times? No. Verse 6 tells us that immediately after Jesus healed this man, it says the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. They go right back to their little scheming. Oh, we didn't get him this time. How can we get him next time? They are still blinders on, stubborn hearts, unwilling to see the good that was just done. It's not just the good that's possible, but the good that just happened right in front of their eyes, and they're missing it. Man, they're missing out. And they're missing out, and they're overlooking people because of their selfish eyes and their stubborn hearts. That's the cause of people getting overlooked. That's the cause of the hurt and people feeling not valued. And it made Jesus angry. That's just, wow. You realize that there's both comfort and challenge in the fact that Jesus got angry. You might be thinking like, okay, I get the challenge, but comfort? How is Jesus getting angry comforting to me? Well, here's why it's comforting, is because at one time or another, we have all been the man with the withered hand. We have all had challenges and struggles in our life. Some of them we couldn't do anything about. They just made life hard. And we may question, does anybody see this? Does anybody know or realize or care about what I'm going through? We've all been there. Here's the good news. As proven by Jesus in this story, we are not overlooked by our God. Jesus saw this man as an individual and what he needed. He was looking for where is the brokenness that needs to be healed. And this is the same God that we serve and worship today, who has eyes that seek out you, that see you for what you're going through. And he has a heart that loves you enough to do something about it. The greatest example of this is Jesus dealing with our sin problem on the cross. We have all sinned and broken that relationship with God. We have brought burdens and challenges onto our own lives, and God saw it and was unwilling to let us stay in that hurt. He had a heart that loved us enough to do something about it, and he sent Jesus. Jesus willingly died for us to offer us salvation. And God loves you so much and wants what's best for you to such a degree that he gets angry when someone else overlooks you. I mean, that's an intense kind of love that God treats both you and I with. That's beautiful. That should be comforting. But there's also a challenge here then is we don't want to be the ones to anger God. We don't want to be like the Pharisees who overlooked others. So we have to realize that we who are not overlooked should not overlook others. We need to avoid having selfish eyes. And we need to avoid having stubborn hearts. What does that look like? Well, let me ask you, you ever have plans? You ever have things that like, this is my schedule for today? And so zoned in that you just walk right past people. I've done that more times than I care to admit. We need to take our blinders off. And what does that look like? Well, let me ask you, have you ever walked into a room where you have friends and you immediately want to go to them? You immediately want to, that's good. Man, it's so good to have community. But I want to invite you the next time you walk into, those of you that are still in school or eating lunch in the cafeteria, or those of you that at work, you've got a break room where everybody goes on their breaks. The next time you go in, see your friends, but have eyes that look around and say, who doesn't have friends here? Who's left out? Even today, when we're done with worship and class, and as we get up and we're fellowshipping and we're mingling, take a moment and look around and see who's on their own, who may be under the radar, overlooked. And then let's have hearts that are loving and open enough to say, I want what's best for that person. Go sit by them. Go talk to them. Go say something. Give them a smile. Make people realize or help people to realize that they are important. They are valued. They are seen. This story of Jesus and the man with the shriveled hand is proof to us that the God of the universe sees you. That should be comforting to us. Let's then take that comfort and offer it to other people. Let's be like Jesus and have eyes that seek and hearts that love enough to do something about it, to do what's best for others. God saw us in our broken state, and he loved us enough to do something about it, to offer us that salvation. And if you are here and you need to receive that gift of salvation by being baptized into Christ, there's not a better time to do it. Or if you have any other concerns that we can pray with you about, that we can hear you out, we want to do that. Would you come forward and share that with us as we stand and sing?